everyone. Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf, Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We've got a great show for you today, including a Steelers star calling out the team, LeBron James putting on a show at the Staples Center, and you will never guess where Dez Bryant wants to play football this year. That's where we will kick things off this morning with Dez Bryant, the unemployed wide receiver who spent the last 4 weeks watching football from the couch like the rest of us. Dez has not ruled out a return to the league. It's the league who has seemingly ruled out a return of Dez. Last night, someone asked Dez on Twitter who he'd sign with, and he tweeted, "I'd rather it be the Dallas Cowboys. If not, I'll be ready to play somewhere else." Well, isn't that interesting? CeCe, what do you think? I mean, we've been sort of floating this idea almost jokingly, but should the Cowboys bring back Dez Bryant?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, even at the beginning, and I think first, Jenna, you posed a question. Dez Bryant got released
in the spring.
Yes. And
Bad timing for him because it was after free agency teams. It was a time where teams had basically already spent their free agency money. So that's the time we're talking about.
Yeah, but just to put it in context as far as the things that have happened. April 13th, 47 wide receivers have been signed since then. But within a week of that, you know, we're doing shows. We have no off season. Jenna asked Nick and I, "Hey, is there a chance Dez Bryant might not be playing?" And I said, what we try not to say is, "Oh, that's a dumb question." And Nick and I was like, "Oh, no, Jenna, that's not the question. That was a tough question. That was a good question because I'm fooled by the whole thing. I thought Dez would have been signed. I would think even with the early offer to Baltimore, it lets you know that there was some interest there. He turned down that multi-year contract. Even of late went to Cleveland last month, and they didn't sign him. Now, Cleveland has since let go of Josh Gordon. Why hasn't Cleveland revisited the issue as far as signing him? So I'm puzzled by the whole thing. I'm shocked. 47 other receivers signed since he was released April 13th, and Dez Bryant doesn't have a team. Dallas Cowboys, they got two big plays from their wide receivers.
Yes.
since the season started, they're 2-2. So these guys not setting it on fire. I'm puzzled by the whole thing. I'm concerned. When you look at the number of players that don't have resumes, that the teams are taking a chance on, and Dez not being employed by an NFL team, I'm concerned about it, and I don't have a reason why he wouldn't be signed at this point in the season, Nick.
Could the Cowboys use him? Absolutely, unequivocally, yes. They're 30th in the league in points. They're 30th in passing. Despite being fourth in rushing, they are 27th in total yards because their passing's been so bad.
They need him.
There's four teams in the league that are averaging double the passing yards of the Dallas Cowboys, which seems impossible in pro football. Allen Hurns has been an abject disaster as your big free agent signing. See, you said you thought he could get to 1,000 yards because somebody had to.
I used to know wide receivers. I used to be able to predict stuff as far as wide receivers. I'm no know-it-all and everything, but Dez Bryant not playing in the NFL the first week in October, that's not going to happen. Allen Hurns coming over, I watched him play when he was at Miami. I saw at Jacksonville. He had a 1,000-yard season, got injured. Also, the quarterback in there in Jacksonville I thought was holding him back. I was wrong about that.
Allen Hurns has 7 catches for 81 yards, and I don't point it out to twist a knife at you. Allen Hurns was their best option. But the guys who have been productive wide receivers for the Cowboys are a slot guy, Cole Beasley.
Yes.
An unknown tight end in Jeff Swaim, and a running back who catching isn't what he does well in Ezekiel Elliott. Those are top three targeted guys, their top three catches. So, yes, they could use him. There's no question they could use him. I have this question, though. Does Dez Bryant actually want to play football? Or does he only want to play football for the Dallas Cowboys? And if they decided culturally and institutionally, we don't want him. Because you know this is almost a handicap of mine at times. I try to address everything from it. How does this make sense? The Khalil Mack trade made no sense to me until I thought, well, maybe Gruden thinks they don't have a quarterback, so they have to acquire the picks. They're going to be bad this year anyway. Then all of a sudden, that made sense to me. Dez Bryant turning down a deal from Baltimore, that made sense at the time. He miscalculated his market value. But then hardballing Cleveland for more money, That doesn't make sense to me when the market had been set. Unless Dez Bryant is a guy that lives in Dallas, maybe he's been good with his money, maybe he's comfortable in Dallas, and has had this time away from football and is feeling, I don't have to play it. I would like to play for the Cowboys. I would like to be back with Jerry Jones. If that's not the case, and maybe that isn't the case, then there's only two other options. One is that the league has decided Dez Bryant does not need to be in the NFL anymore for reasons that we are not discussing, or that he is just continuing.
That would be hard to believe, because Seattle signed Michael Kendrick. This guy's getting ready to be sentenced.
He's getting ready to be sentenced
in January. But he had already pleaded guilty. Seattle signed. They didn't care. Seattle signed him up. Like, we even see Carolina under their new ownership. They signed Eric Reed as a safety, the first guy who joined Cap as far as the protest. Like, Nick, I don't know what it is. It must be something, though. Like, there's no way a player like Dez Bryant. Now, no, he's not a superstar right now, but he should be starting in the NFL. Certainly. He's one of the 64 best wide receivers in the world, and he's at home.
And there, certainly an upgrade, obviously, from what the Cowboys currently have.
I can list maybe a half dozen teams where he would walk in today and be their best receiver. He would be the best receiver on the Cowboys. He would be the best receiver on Jacksonville, given the injury. He would be the best receiver, I believe, on the Jets or on the Niners. That's four teams. There's only 32 of them. So, like, this doesn't make sense. I know that we're supposed to come on television and have the answers. There's a piece of this puzzle that is going to make it all snap into focus, like a movie where there's a twist at the end. You're like, oh, now I get it. The piece is either there is some intel on Dez Bryant that scares teams away way more than pleading guilty to insider trading, way more than, not to make the Eric Reed comparison because he did nothing wrong, but way more than the controversy surrounding Eric Reed. Way more, who's the, Michael Floyd just got signed by a team Dez wanted to go to with his off the field, I think, drinking problems in the past. It's either something like that off the field that scares people away from Dez Bryant.
What about New England?
Sure.
I mean, New England took in Josh Gordon.
Absolutely right.
Now, we know Josh Gordon has been in crisis since this season twice.
Right.
You know? Like, we know that. He was in crisis a couple weeks ago on a Saturday, late for the team practice. And we know before training camp he had some type of crisis that he removed himself and decided to seek more treatment before he started the season.
What about it from the other side, from the Cowboys' perspective? Besides pride, what would keep Jerry Jones from bringing Dez Bryant back? Obviously, there's a need, and obviously, they know who he is. And whatever this off-the-field thing is, they were seemingly okay with it for years and years up until this past offseason.
Jerry, it's not what Dallas knows, I think. It's what Dallas does not want to tolerate anymore. You know, they've decided that Dak is going to be their guy. Like, Zeke's the best player on the team and in the organization, but Dak's going to be their guy. And they said, we're trying to create a Dak-friendly offense and a Dak-friendly environment. They didn't say environment, but when you start letting guys go and you know that there might be some type of conflict, and we know the coaching staff didn't want Dez Bryant to come back through the reports and everything in Dallas. So when you start saying things like that, it's going to be hard for Dallas to bring because they've already made the quarterback a priority.
It's hard looking at, with all the information we have, it is hard to draw any conclusion that does not involve this fact. Dak Prescott does not want to be throwing the ball to Dez Bryant. He would rather be throwing the ball to less talented guys, have one hand tied behind his back, than whatever comes with Dez. Because here's what you would say, see, I can't prove it, and I can't prove it, but I could make a hell of a case in court. Here's something I feel like I know. If Dak Prescott today walked in to Jerry Jones' office and said, bring back Dez, I think the phone call is made. Now, I'm not
no
saying
doubt.
I don't think Dak Prescott went into the office and said, get rid of him. I'm not putting that on him.
But yeah, that's a difference.
There's a difference between a guy pushing a guy out the door,
right,
or once a guy's out the door, a guy not advocating for him. But if Dak Prescott today, I believe, said, we need Dez Bryant back, Jerry clearly still has love for him.
I don't want to make a concert.
Yeah, and I don't want to make too much of that. there's a lot, like, to spend time outside of work with someone you used to work with shows you have a friendly, if not loving, relationship with the person. Jerry clearly still has affection for Dez Bryant. It is a football decision, and with all their comments about Dak-friendly offense, we're doing this, we're doing that, Dak, if he thought they needed him or wanted him, I think Dak would have that power to do that.
Yeah, I am not that kind of person that if you used to work with me, like, you better make sure we on proper speaking terms and everything before you try to approach me. I ain't like Jerry. Nick has seen that up close and personal.
That is a true story.
Yeah. You're not going to Beyonce concerts with your enemies.
No. Well, certainly not with his former colleagues.
No. Clearly.
Sometimes they think
even current
friends,
ones. Got to take a break. Coming up, Le'Veon Bell is far from the Steelers' biggest issue. We'll discuss details next on First Things First. Welcome back. We'll break down the Steelers in a bit, but first, NBA preseason. LeBron James' first game at the Staples Center did not disappoint. The King goes coast to coast for the dunk.
Oh, LeBron gets the steal here. Man on each wing. Oh, let me show the Lakers fans, just in case the Kobe haters had forgot, I still am the King. I gave myself that nickname for a reason.
If they're going with this color yellow in the jersey, that color yellow should be on the court. More on that in an hour.
Oh, geez.
Rockets, Grizzlies.
I'm trying to look at the ball players. Now you got me looking at the court.
Chris Paul showing off the vision for the slick assist through the defender's legs to Melo for the three.
Man, they could have used one of those threes from the guy who was playing that spot last year, Trevor Ariza, game 7, 0 for 12 against the Warriors.
I'm going to tell you, I got my fandom out. I'm pulling for Melo.
There we go.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't like guys to be on that list. Best players not to win a championship. Yeah. I mean, I like to be on the list with some other people, but I mean,
take the list shorter.
Hornets, Kemba Walker leading the break finds Miles Bridges for the LEU.
Miles Bridges, your guy. Shout out, Coach Izzo, one of our favorites. This is a team. I think they will be better this year than last year just because of the growth of their young players. I like how they drafted. Kimba's one of the most underrated guys in the league. Go get him, Miles Bridges.
Coach Izzo, check in with me, man. It's football season. Let's talk about your favorite sport. We know you just coach basketball because they pay you. We know your favorite, your love is football. Hit me, bruh.
All right, moving on to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Their record, 4 games in, the ever so popular 1-2-1. Mostly due to a lack of a running game, perhaps some in-house struggles, and one of the worst defenses in the league. But just those things. The Steelers are currently 30th in yards allowed and 26th in points allowed. Say it, Nick.
That ain't great.
Steelers captain Cam Hayward had harsh words for his teammates.
This defense isn't about making plays. It's about doing your job. And that's for everybody out there. It's not just one guy. I don't give a damn if I never get a sack again. But if everybody else does their job and we get off the field, so be it. The same mistakes have happened throughout the year. And if we don't grow and we don't move on and put ourselves in better positions, then we're not going to be a successful team. I don't look for big speeches. I just look for production. I look for guys to step up. You know, the kitchen's hot right now, and, you know, everybody's looking to get out, you know, so we got to get to work, and we got to settle it down. Either buy in or don't get on the field.
All right, CeCe, what do you think? Can the Steelers contend if they don't fix what's going on defense right now?
No, just to let you know who Cam Hayward is, he's one of the great leaders that the Pittsburgh Steelers have, a guy who doesn't say anything. So it's one of those kind of things that, oh, the quiet guy's talking? Like, they should listen to him. So what he's saying is great information. Pittsburgh is not necessarily an attack defense. It's kind of a read and then react defense. So it's very, very important, a lot like New England, that you know your assignments. The reason why Miami last week against New England could not get outside and couldn't run all their speed sweeps and use all their speed is because New England are very assignment conscious, even though they might not be as talented. But from an assignment standpoint, that's who the Pittsburgh Steelers are supposed to be. From a gap control standpoint, they're a 2-gap. Hold your gap, know your responsibility, and depend on your teammate to be able to know their assignment. So that's what he's saying, that the coaches are doing a good job of teaching us what we're supposed to do, but sometimes guys think that they know more and they want to freelance within the system. So what he's telling us in watching the film, you can see a lot of Pittsburgh Steelers that are freelancing compared to buying into what the game plan is and doing what the coaches tell you to do. You would think in pro sports, is that a normal thing? No, it's not normal. That's why he's speaking out, and that's why I believe that the Pittsburgh Steelers, over the last several years, people talk about Ryan Shazier, his injury and everything, how this defense has been bad since then. Yeah, but it's not John Bostic's fault. Pro Football Focus has him as the middle linebacker, the 10th best middle linebacker in football. So it's not his fault. So we can kind of move on from that narrative. It's this whole defense. It's the front line. It's the linebackers in coverage. It's also that secondary, missed assignments and giving up big plays. So Cam gave us, he enlightened us on what's going on in Pittsburgh. And this is one of those kind of things that he wasn't talking to the fans and everything. He's talking to the locker room. And that's sometimes how you have to utilize the media, because he knows his teammates are listening, and I hope that they heed his words.
So what has happened to the Steelers' defense? The back end right now is giving them where the majority of their trouble is coming. Yes, they have not overcome the Shazier injury, and the numbers are jarring pre-Shazier injury and post, but they had an offseason to fix it.
Yes.
And you mentioned that Bostic and even Vince Williams hadn't been a terrible player. He's the other inside backer.
Mm-hmm.
The Steelers have made this defense by drafting high-quality players at the top of the draft. Their stars on offense are not first-round picks, aside from Big Ben, who's first-round pick 15 years ago. Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, their wide receivers, not first-round picks. They've spent those first-round and second-round picks on defense, and right now it looks like they've missed on some guys. Artie Burns is a corner that is struggling. They drafted a safety in the first round this year, Terrell Edmonds. It's way too early to say he's a good or a bad pick, but as a rookie safety, he's struggling. They let Mike Mitchell walk out the door. They brought in Morgan Burnett. He's struggling. So, like, the back end of their defense, Joe Hayden is looking older as opposed to how he looked last year when they brought him over from Cleveland. The reason that I think, Jenna, they still can contend is every team in the AFC that we look at as a contender right now has one glaring weakness.
Yes.
The Chiefs have the same weaknesses defensively. I think the Chiefs have a more explosive offense, but when Le'Veon Bell gets back, the Steelers might have a more balanced offense, but they have the same issues defensively. Jacksonville has all these issues in reverse. The no questions about their defense, all the questions about their offense.
Yes.
The Patriots, to me, there's not one glaring thing I point to, just an overall lack of team speed and lack of elite playmakers on both sides of the ball make it to me where, aside from Tom Brady, what do they do great? So there's no team in the AFC that I'm like, oh, they are a team that is buttoned up across the board, the way Philly was last year, the way I thought Minnesota was last year, the way the Rams appear to be this year. Like, so I think they can overcome it because there's not a team in the conference that doesn't have a similar issue, just maybe on a different side of the ball.
We talk about Ryan Shazier a lot, and yes, he misses his physical productivity, but is there also something to missing him calling out plays, him being the leader of that defense, him making sure everyone is where they are? You talk about an attack defense and a read and react defense. Did it change at all when he came out, and is that why?
It did change because, I mean, he's one of the great linebackers. Last year, he was having a potential defensive MVP type of season. So even though we might replace some of the productivity from a tackle standpoint, you can't replace two things that I feel like they're missing. His ability to be able to cover tight ends and running backs. I mean, he is a fast guy. He can play sideline to sideline. Bostic is a more physical guy and more in a phone booth type. So Ryan Shazier is one of the elite linebackers, three-down linebackers that we have. And also, man, him and Cam Hayward, they played at Ohio State together. He's one of the great leaders. He was a captain at Ohio State. And I'm not just saying that kid came from Ohio State. I know the kid since he was in high school, when he was in Fort Lauderdale, and he decided to come to Ohio State. He's always been a captain. He's always been an outspoken leader. That part right there is missing from that team.
And you can see the numbers. And again, it's not an excuse. It's an explanation. That since 2017, pre-injury and post-injury, everyone's going to point to the points per game, 17 to 27, but that red zone percentage is jarring. To only give up a touchdown on half of your red zone possessions to now it's 70%, which is third worst in the NFL over that stretch, that final layer leads to that first layer, the points being what they are. And they should be able to overcome one injury. I understand that part of it, but right now they haven't, and the secondary is not helping them. And I would argue not having a running game this part of the season has hurt them, because while they're scoring, they are not maintaining time of possession the way they were last year with Le'Veon Bell, and so the defense is out there more.
They got their work cut out for them this week. They're playing the Atlanta Falcons. Mm-hmm. How do you fix this defense? And is this something that can be done week to week?
Yeah, it's something that can be done. And it's no different than what I would advise for Belichick. It was no different than what I advised for Tony Dungy when both of these guys had defenses that were struggling. Hey, man, get more involved. This is how you made your money. As a defensive assistant, as a defensive coordinator, you cut your teeth by being an assignment, you know, a tax-type defense, design something and get more involved in the room on a daily basis. I believe that's what Mike Tomlin's got to do. That's what Tony Dungy used to do. And we see Belichick all the time. When that defense starts to struggle, you start seeing him more involved in the communication. So when that head coach is a defensive coach, I need him to get involved in what they're doing.
Take full advantage of it. All right, guys, thanks. We got to take a break. Coming up, will Lakers fans embrace LeBron James? That's next on First Things First. We're talking LeBron. The NLDS begins Thursday on FS1. Nolan Arenado led the Rockies to a red-hot finish late last night. Now they'll open the series in Milwaukee against MVP candidate Christian Yelich and the Brewers. Game one of the NLDS Thursday at 4 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. How good has Yelich been?
That was Yelich. Yelich's final week of the season. I thought Javi Baez was the MVP. Yelich's final week swayed it. But that game last night, the longest winner-go-home game in baseball history, that had me up to about 1:30 in the morning. That was a great baseball game. A great baseball game.
What time you get to work?
3:30, man. All right.
He'll be here in an hour.
I got here at about 4:15. My usual time.
Time now for Say What? The NBA preseason is used for knocking off the rust, and no one found that out harder than second-year Hornets guard Malik Monk last night. Say what?
Back in my day, they were still rookies until the first. There's a rookie mistake. To my point, they are still rookies until the first regular season game of this year, and Malik proves me right.
Wow. Malik Monk forgot his jersey.
So Malik Monk had his warm-ups on, checks into the game, takes his warm-ups off, and he doesn't have his jersey on. So he had to go back.
That's Michael Jordan's fault because he should know, because when you're at Kentucky, they're royalty. They don't do this at Michigan State. I know Coach Izzo's watching, him and his wife Lupe. Hey, thanks for being fans of the show. At Kentucky, they have guys that put the jerseys on the players before they go on the court.
Oh, okay.
But he's in the pros now. He's responsible for it. So Michael Jordan, if you draft a guy from Kentucky, you seem to like Kentucky players, you got a couple of them.
Your relationship with Coach Cal is why every day before the show, you stand like this and wait for Christine to come over, drape
your
jacket
on
you, tie your tie, do all this stuff. Now I get it. Because what? What, was I not supposed to say that?
Yeah, you would have someone to do that, but your wife is home sleep, making money sleeping. All right, what? Now, you see that? Yeah, how'd that go? How'd that go for you, Nick, right?
Great. Yeah.
I had a black belt until I ran into a guy with a double black belt.
Say hi to Lupe again.
Lupe, hey girl, shout out to you. Izzo household, let's do this.
What's happening?
Stories to start your morning brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. Hey, if you watch our show, write in. We'll probably give you a shout out. Alabama starting quarterback Tua Tagovailoa had some strong praise for his backup Jalen Hurts. Tua said, he is a leader. Nick, what'd you make of Jalen's decision to stay at Alabama?
A lot of people juxtapose this to Kelly Bryant's decision to leave. It's different because Jalen has another year after this. Jalen is getting to play a lot this year because they're blowing everybody out of the water at Bama. And I thought it was very nice to hear from Tua. I'd never heard the young man speak, really. Like, this was the first time he was allowed to do a regular press conference. He was very supportive of his older teammate. And because he's played so well, it's gotten Jalen the ability to play in the fourth quarter of every game they've had this year.
Yeah, Jalen's situation is totally different. I can understand. He's going to graduate in December. He still has 1 year he can play. But, man, he's going to be a hero in the state of Alabama. So I wouldn't be in a rush as much as Kelly Bryant would be leave Clemson. His situation is totally different. And these younger players, you learn an awful lot from veteran players, even if you might have more talent than them.
Moving on to the Ohio State Buckeyes. They've endured a slew of injuries of late. Urban Meyer said he urges banged-up players to, quote, contribute in one way or another. See, is Ohio State the biggest threat to take down Alabama, even with the injuries?
They're one of the threats, but they can't beat Alabama being banged up. Also, from an offensive standpoint, they got to get better on the offensive line. From a defensive standpoint, they got to get Nicky Bosa back.
They have.
Now, he's not supposedly supposed to be back until maybe the first week in November, but they need him back to be able to beat Bama. But they do have the type of quarterback that would strike fear in that young secondary that Bama has.
The only way anybody is beating Bama this year is if that team is fully functional, Bama maybe's a little banged up, and you get some bounces. So the most important thing for Ohio State, now that they got past Penn State, I was worried about them in Penn State's game without Nicky Bosa.
No need to worry, man. No,
okay, yeah, only 12-point fourth quarter comeback. They need Bosa fully healthy for the college football playoff.
All right, to the NFL now. Two all-time quarterbacks on the verge of an all-time milestone. Both Tom Brady and Drew Brees could throw their 500th touchdown pass this weekend. That it seems unimaginable. See, how impressive of an accomplishment is this?
It's very impressive. I went through a day and age where I was able to watch Montana, Marino, Kelly, Elway, like all these guys play at the same time. So I've seen stuff like this, but 500 club, I was able to witness 2 weeks ago when Drew Brees passed the completions all time. Now, I mean, he's an assault on the record books. I mean, it's a great time to be a quarterback and a fan of passing football in the NFL.
You mentioned Drew Brees. I want to talk about Brady. It would have been unimaginable, even after he won those first three Super Bowls, to think Brady was ever going to have this type of statistical resume.
Yes.
We thought Brady was going to have this great winning clutch resume, but never the gaudy numbers. And then that all changed in 07 and really changed from 2010 to now. Remarkable by Tom Brady and, of course, Drew Brees.
Speaking of the Patriots, Pat's preparing for the Colts on Thursday Night Football. Rob Gronkowski missed practice on Tuesday with an injured ankle, while Julian Edelman will make his season debut this week. Nick, how tough will it be for opposing defenses to game plan for Gronk with Julian Edelman back?
When they finally play a game together, whether it's Thursday or a week from Sunday, what you're finally going to see is how much harder it will be, if not impossible, to play Gronk the way everyone's played him all year long. They're not going to be treating him as a gunner anymore. He's not going to get doubled off the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And even if he does get doubled, now they have someone that can take advantage of that. Now they have someone that can make you pay for that. So I think while Gronk is going to be happy to get Julian Edelman back, Edelman is also, because they have Edelman's injury, Gronk's injury in 16, like they've kind of had stops and starts. They haven't both been on the field together since November of 16. The ability for Edelman also to not be the guy defenses are the most worried about. It's Gronk's the better player, and Edelman benefits from that. But I think given how teams have guarded the Pats this year, I think Gronk's going to benefit enormously from Edelman back from suspension.
It's with Gronk and Edelman, it's your choice. You have to double-team Gronk. If not, Gronk will dominate the game. So do I want to get clubbed over the head, or do I want to die by 1,000 paper cuts? Because that's what Edelman and Brady do to you. Move the chains, first down. They paper cut, paper cut, paper cut. Okay. And it's like, oh, this stings, it stings. And next thing you know, you got a pool of blood. If you decide to go with one-on-one on Gronk, I mean, he's going to club you over the head. He's going to knock you out. Like, that is not the option. So I think you have a better chance. The paper cuts allow Edelman to get the single coverage and hope that you get some type of rush. That's the best way to try to negate New England's ability to throw the ball, because you can't take both of those guys out and take their backs out of the passing game.
No idea that you were so graphic and descriptive when it came to the paper cuts with the pool of blood.
Yeah, paper cuts
and
can kill you. Yes. It just takes a long time.
Okay. Takes a long time.
Very we're good at stings. Let's move on quickly. Moving on to LeBron James. A new chapter begins in Los Angeles. The King made his preseason debut in a Lakers uniform last night. Mark the day. Or don't mark it. I'll probably remind you. LeBron did LeBron things last night, scored 13 points, grabbed 3 rebounds in 15 minutes of play. Said before the game, it's a new beginning, a new start. It's a new excitement for myself. Nick, what do you think LeBron's biggest adjustment will be with this Lakers team this year?
Go play fast. Never done it. Even his rookie year, LeBron's never been on a team that's in the top 10 in pace. And he's got a bunch of guys on his team.
Do you think that's a style, or just think even after 15 years it's coincidence?
No, I think that LeBron has said before they want to play fast. But because of the type of basketball intellect LeBron has, he's realized either over the course of a season or over the course of a game, typically, you know what's the best way for us to score? Me to have the ball up top, diagnose everything mm-hmm. and try to be surgical with it. He doesn't have that type of team this year. Everyone's talking about the Lakers' lack of shooting. I think that is a slightly overblown issue. What the Lakers have, though, what they do have, is young guys that like to get out and run. It's the only category the Lakers were top three in the NBA last year. Pace of play. I know they added some bench players, but their key guys are all back. And I think LeBron has the ability to play fast. In Miami, that was an older team. In Cleveland, it was a much older team. So it wasn't in his nature, and it wasn't in his teammates' best interest over the last 8 years of his career. Get out and play fast. And I mentioned the young guys. This is the youngest team LeBron's played with since his rookie season. And obviously, the age is brought up dramatically by the fact that LeBron's 33. So how he adjusts to the pitfalls of playing with young guys on and off the court that he did not have to deal with at all over the last 8 seasons of his career.
Yeah, I think the biggest adjustment he makes is off the court. On the court, of course, he's got to make some adjustments, style, playing with younger players. Do they have enough shooters, adapting to the skill level? Because one thing in LeBron, he diagnoses early. He even plays the NBA video game, so he knows the skill level, where guys like the ball. Where do they like to shoot it? Do they like to drive? So those type of things. I think the biggest adjustment is off the court. How do you lead younger players? Like, when LeBron went to Miami, because that's when his leadership was pushed to a whole nother level. There was a certain amount of respect that Chris Bosh had for LeBron, Dwayne Wade, because not only had they competed against each other, but they had been friends for a number of years. And then when you look at the players that were added to the Heat Heat in that time, that being Ray Allen, Shane Battier, Birdman, like all these guys, when they came to join LeBron, they came with a great deal of respect. Now, I do believe that the young players for the Lakers, they have a lot of respect for LeBron, but it's just based on the short period of time and what they've seen from a distance. They haven't lost series to LeBron. They haven't really competed against LeBron. So I think what he's going to have to do from a leadership standpoint day to day to make sure these guys buy in, he's got to expose himself. He's got to allow them to be part of his personal life, his family life. Now, LeBron has been doing that with veteran players, but when you do it with younger players, it's a different experience. I just hope that he's totally open to doing the things that he's done in the past to be able to share his life with these younger players. He's done that with the veteran players. I just wonder if he's going to do that with these younger players.
I want to just ask a question about something you said earlier. We don't often talk about things that LeBron needs to change during the game or with his game to adjust to the other team, the team that he's on. When you talk about the speed, is that something he is going to speed up his speed, or will he get the other four to slow down with him?
So
or is that just depending on what the defense gives you?
If he plays slow, the team will play slow. Like, if he tries to get out and push it, they will get out and push it. Like, the team is going to go how he goes, which is why I think on the court, the most important relationship this season on the court, because, see, your points off the court are well taken. Like, Richard Jefferson has talked about the greatest teammate he's ever had. But it's easier to...
A lot of team-building exercise, a lot of things he invites, buys things, goes places, does a lot of things that we don't see from all the superstars.
But it's easier doing that when you're working with guys your age, your generation, who also have kids, who might have wives, who aren't out there. Like, if I'm Brandon Ingram, my idea of a good time on a night off... it's probably hitting some club in L.A. And if I'm LeBron James or Richard Jefferson, Channing Frye, my idea of a good time on a night off is probably that expensive wine they like. You know, it's a nice meal. And so finding that, the bridging the generation gap is a real thing. When LeBron's in year 16 and the best players on the Lakers are in years 2, 3, and 4. But on the court, the relationship I'm most interested in is he and Lonzo. Because if he and Lonzo sync up basketball intellectually, then the Lakers will be the best passing team this side of Golden State. Mm-hmm. You will have two brilliant, unselfish basketball players. And I think that's the part of Lonzo's game LeBron can unlock even further. And that, even though Ingram's the second best player, that's the most important relationship on the Lakers.
Yeah, that was something I had to learn late in my career. Because Randy Moss, when he came into the league, I had been playing so long. And at that point, I had to adjust my personal life for Randy. He moved to South Florida. He moved in a neighborhood very, very close to mine. And I had to let him into what my home life was. I had to let him into a lot of different things. But I also had to find out what he enjoyed doing. And that's when I found out he enjoyed fishing. And that's when I went out, bought a bass boat. Man, Randy and I used to spend a lot of time on lakes fishing all around Twin Cities and everything in South Florida. But it allowed myself to be able to spend more time with him where I could get to learn him more. And that's what LeBron's going to have to be able to do. Right. And it's not always as easy as it seems.
Nope, I did it with Nick. We're still learning how to fish. Coming up, we have fun, don't we, out on the lake?
Mm-hmm.
Hours
teach
and hours.
You to fish.
Teaching you
eat
to fish.
Forever.
You and Eden forever. Coming up, can Jared Goff.
I wonder if they can clip that back part off and still put that in
every day.
Yeah.
Lead
yeah,
the exactly. Rams to the Super Bowl. No, what you said was great. I just wanted to make sure that.
It was about you? You do a great
no,
job.
No, well, I, you know.
Bap, bap. That's a three-pointer from Jenna from deep.
Back here on First Things First. Former head coach Eric
what
Mangini
up, coach?
Joins
good
us.
Morning. Good morning.
All laughs. All laughs.
All giggles.
What is? Oh, I thought.
Look like a.
All right, here we go. There is one undefeated team left
got an
in the,
issue? Get
in
a
the NFC. Don't need one. Happens to be the one team we would have guessed would probably be in this position, the LA Rams. Statistically, they have the best offense in the conference, led by third-year quarterback Jared Goff. Defensive tackle and offseason addition Ndamukong Suh decided to weigh in on a non-controversial topic. Suh posted on Instagram that Jared Goff is, quote, the best quarterback I ever had. All right.
Eat that, Matt Stafford and Ryan Tannehill. Sorry, go ahead.
It's all right. How sustainable do you think Goff's success is, Coach?
Well, it's hard for me to have a defensive lineman evaluate the quarterbacks. I don't know how many meetings he was in Detroit. I don't really know if he understands the game plan. I don't really think that he's been a part of that whole process, but whatever. It's hard. It's also hard now with young quarterbacks, or quarterbacks in general, when we have Fitzpatrick throws for 5 touchdowns and Mitch Trubisky throws for 6 touchdowns, and every week someone's breaking some kind of record, and you're thinking, is this more because the quarterbacks have gotten that much better, or is it the result of the rule changes? Is it the result of defenses having more and more difficulty applying pressure? So it's the trends just seem bit skewed.
Well, we have
especially in the early part of this season.
And we have to adjust what we consider a great statistical game. Like right now, the league average quarterback rating, the league average is almost identical to Joe Montana's career quarterback rating. So that means we have to change what we consider a great game for a quarterback. In regards to Goff, what we can say is even in this year of spectacular quarterback play, he has the highest quarterback rating in football. His team is the second highest scoring team in football. So even if we're just comparing him to today's contemporaries,
when you look at the top end of the quarterbacks, it's almost more of an indictment of the bottom end of the quarterbacks that they're not more successful than they are than this top group that we have. The thing that he has going for him is he has complementary football. They can play really good defense. They get opportunities, extra opportunities, because of the defense that they're playing. He's got a really impressive running game that they can build off of, which means play actions are that much more effective. Is he doing a great job? He is doing a great job. And what he did last week against Minnesota with the highest quarterback rating and the highest number of completions and the highest number of the most yards is impressive. How sustainable it is, I'm not completely sold on the sustainability.
Back to Ndamukong Suh, his comments. I'm not going to get into is he better, but what I am going to say, he's supported in a different way than any other quarterback that Ndamukong Suh has been with. Not only from an offensive coordinator standpoint, because he's played with offenses in Detroit that they put up tremendous numbers, but from a game plan, they weren't synced with the special teams and with the defenses that he was a part of. The number one big difference between the quarterback and Ndamukong Suh has seen has been the running attack. He's never played with a superstar quarterback who had a superstar running back in Todd Gurley. Because Matthew Stafford, what do they don't have in Detroit since he's been there? They did not give him the type of running game. So they had to lean on the passing game. So the quarterback that he's playing with now has the ability to be better because he's supported by the great running game. Now you also put in Sean McVay, who's calling plays. You also put in 2 or 3 receivers that they can go to at any point. That's why Jared Goff. Now, what we have to get used to is not only the numbers. We had the NFL send us some numbers yesterday, and it's ridiculous the way that they're able to produce points in scoring and the way the quarterbacks are playing. But I believe this. We are in the golden ages of quarterbacks throwing the ball. Now, we might not think these guys are the greatest quarterbacks, but what we're going to see is even the middle of the pack in the NFL, guys throwing for 4,000 yards. The kids coming out of college are better than the kids that we've seen. 5 years ago, we thought the least coached position or the coach the position, we used to talk about this at the other network, this is a position that was not supported, the quarterback, by the type of coaching that we wanted to see. I would say there's been a huge correction in that. We're getting kids that are coming out that are more equipped to be able to throw the ball on the pro level, and then now you can't rough the passer, all the passing rules, all these things lead to the type of numbers that we're seeing, Jenna.
Coach, we talk about sustainability a lot. We look at a team that's playing well or a quarterback that jumps out to an early lead and say, is this sustainable? But isn't it like a little bit more of what C said? Isn't it the intangibles around or the tangibles, or the running game, the offensive line, mm-hmm. the coaching? Isn't all of that what really makes sustainability? You can have all the talent in the world, but if you don't have any of that, it's hard to predict how far into the future you can go and play at that level.
Yeah, having all those elements gives you the best indication of how good that quarterback is, because he's got a complete group around him, and then you can look at it and say, how far did he take the tools that he had? But sustainability is also a function of when you get to the situation like you have with Tom Brady, where his receivers change every year, where they don't have the best talent at every single position. Then it's a function of how good is this guy? How good does he make the players around him? Does he make them better? Is he a force multiplier? And that's really what I don't know with Goff right now.
And you won't know that for a couple of years.
We're gonna have to see. They've done a good job of putting together a really talented roster, both offensively and defensively, and that's a great situation. But what's he going to be like when he doesn't have all those parts and as teams continue to figure him out?
Here's what's exciting for football fans, even if you're not a Rams fan. For a long time in this league, the high-level quarterbacking has been carried by a certain generation. You had Peyton, Brady, Breeze, and the quarterbacks of 04, Rivers, Big Ben, and Eli. That generation, mm-hmm. those six guys won so many games, so many Super Bowls. Over the next decade, we just had a few trickle in. Aaron Rodgers came in.
Yep.
Cam Newton came in. Matt Ryan came in. And now, in the last 3 years, we've had either guys go first or second overall, or teams trade multiple first-round picks to get them in Goff, Wentz, Watson, Mahomes, and Baker. And so I feel like we are now, as that older generation is phasing out, we have five guys, all five of which I think are Pro Bowl level or above quarterbacks. And there had been a bit of a drought. There had been a gap of where's the next great young quarterbacks coming. That's what you were talking about.
Exactly what you said with Marino and Kelly and all those guys.
And so there was those six guys I mentioned, amazingly all of them but Peyton, still playing. Like Eli's still out there. Brady's still out there. Breeze and Brady setting records. But there was from basically 05 to 15, where were the great quarterbacks? There were a lot of misses. A lot of quarterbacks were given chance after chance, mm-hmm. and they topped out somewhere here. I think we have the new crop. I think Goff's one of them. I like his pedigree. First overall pick, what he did at Cal. Wentz, mm-hmm. Watson, you know what I feel about Mahomes. And Baker, I know Baker's sample size is tiny, but I am a true believer that Baker Mayfield's just going to be a star in this league. And that's now what's going to carry, I think, the mantle of this next generation of quarterbacks.
And what we're going to see after this is, in conversating with Trent Dilfer, and who's really on the high school scene and the college scene, we saw the quarterbacks you mentioned to come in the league the last 3 years. This year, we're going to have a couple quarterbacks in top 15 picks that I believe are going to be franchise quarterback. And in 2 years, we're going to have Haskins from Ohio State and Tua from Alabama. So we're going to see, you got 3 years in there with the group that we saw. We're going to have two more years. We're going to have 5 years of guys that if you want to be able to throw the football and your franchise don't have a quarterback, you're not going to have an excuse, because there's an abundance of them, not only in the league, but guys coming into the league.
Well, then maybe they'll actually allow defensive backs to jam receivers again. Maybe they'll try to make it. Maybe they'll do something to try to slow this down so we're not, you know, playing arena football.
Absolutely.
Got to take a break. Coach, stick around. Coming up, to the Cowboys need Dez Bryant. That's next on First Things First. That segment went great, Sam Pepper. Let's gauge where we are with Dez Bryant, everybody. Still unemployed, still wants to play football, still tweeting, apparently, and that just about concludes where we are with Dez Bryant. Dez has apparently not ruled out a return to the league. It's the league who has seemingly ruled out a return of Dez. Last night, someone asked Dez on Twitter who he'd sign with, to which he tweeted back, "I'd rather it be the Dallas Cowboys. If not, I'll be ready to play somewhere else." See, I'll start with you. Should the Cowboys swallow their pride a little and bring back Dez Bryant, who they cut months ago?
I would. Absolutely. I mean, does it make the Dallas Cowboys better this weekend? Yes. Would it give them a better chance to build, win football games? Yes. Would it make them more explosive? Would the defenses, would NFL defenses be excited with Dez Bryant signing somewhere else or signing with Dallas? Would Zeke leading the NFL in rushing? No, man, they don't want him to sign with Dallas. So, I think it's a viable option. But, man, the Dallas Cowboys, I tell people about this, wherever the player is, they have more information on that player than people in the media and people on the street. And Dallas must have enough reasons, the reason why he's not there. And I believe a lot has to do with their quarterback, and they're trying to make this organization, this offense, a Dak-friendly. That's what the owner said. So I believe that who the quarterback is plays a huge role in why Dez is not there.
Yeah, I don't think they can bring him back at this point. They went through a really hard breakup, and they've established they want to do things differently, and they don't want the superstar component to it. And look, I totally understand accommodating someone's personality if they're producing at a really high level, but he wasn't producing at that high level anymore. So now I think it becomes more disruptive than productive. I'm surprised that Dez hasn't signed somewhere. I think that that's a function of Dez not willing to take the deals that have been available and probably not willing to take the deals that are available now. Rodney Harrison used to say the league has a way of humbling you, and Dez is going through that humbling process now, and that's what it's going to take. He's going to have to be willing to go somewhere, play a role, get past the idea of the Dez Bryant that he views himself being and be the Dez Bryant that other people need him to be. And then create whatever opportunity he can create once he gets back on the field.
The Rodney Harrison story is a good story. After being an all-star, multi-Pro Bowls there in San Diego, he decides to swallow his pride to take what he thought was, a lesser role, but it was less money. The role ended up being a bigger role, or the same role that I thought he was a better player in New England. The variance of things that he could do compared to what he was doing in San Diego. And then ultimately, he got paid. Randy Moss did the same thing when he went to Oakland. He took less money to be able to go to New England. So I think that's a great example there.
And sometimes you got to reinvent yourself to create the opportunity to then move to the next contract. Dez can't do anything in terms of making new money for himself unless he's playing football. And he may have to take less now, but tweeting from his gym and doing the kettlebell exercises with 8 million ropes on, that's not going to sell anybody. Going in and
but
being...
But it's not easy, just so you know. Yesterday,
setting that thing up couldn't have been easy. There were 6 ropes, a kettlebell, a trainer. I mean, I got dizzy watching it. But I am encouraged that he can do multiple things at one time, so that's good.
That's good.
But he's got to get on the field. He's got to produce. He's got to get to next year's free agency with some good numbers, and everybody has to get over whatever their perception of Dez as a teammate is, and the only way he can do that is to be a teammate somewhere.
A couple of months ago, Jerry Jones came out and said, we want to make this a Dak-friendly offense, and we bounced around talking about, well, maybe that means we're going to try to pass more, we're going to use Zeke more, but maybe it meant a Dak-friendly offense is not having Dez there.
Like that, you can't draw any other conclusion. They don't have, other than my man MC Cole Beasley, they don't have a single wide receiver on pace for 400 yards. 400.
What?
I'm telling you, Deontay Thompson's got 83. No, I'm looking at it. They played 4 games, right? That's a quarter of the season. Deontay Thompson's their leading receiver other than Beasley. He's got 83 yards. 83 times 4, that's 332 yards. So he's on pace for 332. You got Allen Hurns, he's on pace for 324. Those are their 2 leading outside the number receivers. So I know Dez isn't what he was, but he better than that. And he doesn't have to move. He lives there. He seemingly would take maybe a more friendly deal than the one he rejected in Cleveland, he wants to play for the Cowboys. Like, I think he might want to play for the Cowboys right now more than he wants to play pro football, because it's one thing to turn down the Ravens offer, the first offer. Sometimes the first offer, sometimes you're told never take the first offer. Sometimes you look back and like, damn.
You should say what the first offer was. 3 years, $21 million.
But we also don't know. That could have essentially been 1 year, $7 million.
After you say that, you want to go, wah, wah, wah. Based off of where he is now.
Right, exactly. But the fact that after that happened, he then tried to hardball Cleveland on a one-year deal speaks to me either the guy is totally delusional or doesn't actually want to play for anyone other than the Cowboys, which the rub then to me is to circle back to your point. I think Dak, I'm not saying he should do this or he would do this, but I think if Dak Prescott walked into Jerry Jones' office today and said, we need Dez, I think they would bring back Dez. I'm not saying Dak is the reason he's gone. I'm not saying Dak walked into his office and said, get rid of him. But I do believe if Dak said, we are the 30th ranked passing offense, we have 30th in points, we need Dez Bryant, Jerry clearly still has love for him. I think they'd bring him back. For some reason, Dak would rather have 20 yards a game from Allen Hurns and Deontay Thompson.
Well, hopefully this offense is evolving, and that's what they're betting on in Dallas. But it's just like that one kid in the classroom that's really disruptive, and the teacher's got to spend a bunch of time working with him, and everybody else doesn't grow. You can have a player in a meeting room. You can have a player at practice. And, look, I don't know if Dez was this guy, but they're way more disruptive than they are productive. And even though his numbers are better than those numbers, we don't know what type of negative effect he may have had in the locker room or on the field or in the huddle. I mean, Chris, you've been around it a bunch of times.
Yeah, I've never had a negative influence on any of my quarterbacks.
No, but I'm saying you were probably able to regulate that, too.
No, absolutely.
If someone else spoke up. But you're trying to move forward, and you get the one guy who's it's all about him, and it's so disruptive.
See, 7 catches for 81 yards. You would call that for you a good game?
A quarter?
A good 7 catches for 81 yards. If you had that, that'd be a decent game, right? 7 catches, 81 yards?
No.
Okay, I'm short selling you?
No.
Okay, because 7 catches for 81 yards and no touchdowns is what Allen Hurns has done this season. Deontay Thompson, 9 catches for 83. Tavon Austin, 5 catches for 81.
Yeah. No, 7 for 81 is good when Jake Reed has 5 for 120.
Yeah, Moss had
4 for 160. Okay. And then I chip in because I was buttercutting them in the slot. Yeah, I have 5 first downs, 7 catches, okay. 81. It was cool.
He's going to wake up in the middle of the night, Nick, and be like, 81.
7
what?
For 81.
5 minutes.
I apologize.
I was like him.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.